From bedroom to booked, how bedroom DJs go from $0 to $50,000 per year working weekends. By Kevin Height, Brightside DJs. Chapter 1. 1,000 hours behind the decks. $0 in your bank account. It's Friday night. Your friends are texting about hitting up that new spot downtown. The one with the resident DJ who, let's be honest, isn't even that good. You've heard his mixes. Sloppy transitions. Questionable song selection. But there he is, every weekend, getting paid to do the thing you do better in your bedroom with your eyes closed. And it eats at you. Not in some dramatic, throw your controller across the room kind of way. It's quieter than that. It's the slow burn of watching someone else live a version of the life you want while you're standing in the crowd wondering what they have that you don't. Because you've put in the work. You know you have. Maybe it's 1,000 hours behind the decks. Maybe it's closer to 5,000. You've lost count, honestly. What you haven't lost is the ability to beat match in your sleep, to read the energy of a room before most people even notice it shifting, to build a set that takes a crowd from zero to euphoria and bring them back down without losing a single person. You've studied this craft the way most people study for a degree, except nobody handed you a diploma at the end, and there's no career office placing you in a job. You've played your friends' house parties. You've done the bar gig for $150 and a bar tab. Maybe you scored a Tuesday night opening slot at a club where you played to 30 people, half of whom were staring at their phones. And every time the same thing happened, people danced, the energy was right, and you walked away thinking, see, I can do this. But then Monday comes. You're back at the day job. The one that pays the bills, the one you're grateful for, but the one that feels like a slow surrender of something you can't quite name. It's not that the job is bad. It's that it's not the thing. It's the have to, not the want to. And every lunch break you spend scrolling through Instagram, watching other DJs post about their weekends, feels like a small paper cut on something that used to feel like a dream. Here's the math, and it's not pretty. 1,000-plus hours of practice, thousands of dollars in equipment, courses, music subscriptions, and your total DJ income this year? Maybe $800. Maybe $1,200 if you had a good month. Do the division on that, and you're earning less per hour than you made at your first summer job. The worst part isn't the money, though. The worst part is the question that creeps in on Sunday mornings when you're lying in bed after another Saturday night where you weren't booked. Am I wasting my time? You watch other DJs, some of them objectively not as skilled as you, landing consistent gigs, and you can't figure out the pattern. You've tried networking. You've messaged promoters who never respond. You've sent mixes to venue managers who promise to get back to you and never do. You've done everything you can think of, and the needle hasn't moved. So you start to wonder if the problem is you, not your skills. You know your skills are solid, but something else, something you can't put your finger on, some invisible wall between where you are and where you want to be, and no amount of bedroom practice seems to break through it. Your girlfriend or your wife, she's supportive. She says the right things, but you can see the question forming behind her eyes, the one she's too kind to ask out loud. How long are we going to keep doing this? And your friends, they mean well. Keep at it, man. But you hear what they're not saying. You hear the gentle suggestion that maybe it's time to be realistic. Maybe DJing is a hobby. Maybe it was always a hobby. You're not ready to accept that. Not yet, but the doubt is getting louder. I know this feeling because I lived it. Every frustration you just read, that was my life. Not a version of it. Not something similar. The exact same spiral of practicing alone, playing free gigs, watching other DJs get opportunities I couldn't crack, and slowly starting to wonder if I was chasing something that would never pay off. I fell in love with DJing when I was 23 years old. I went to a music festival in British Columbia called Shambhala, and I saw something that rewired my brain. DJs on stage, massive speakers, thousands of people moving to music that one person was controlling. The energy was unlike anything I'd ever felt. And I didn't think that would be cool someday. I thought with a clarity that surprised even me, that has to be me. So I bought a controller, downloaded some software, found some tracks, and I started playing in my bedroom with zero instruction, zero tutorials, zero guidance. This was 2007. There were no YouTube breakdowns of how to beat match, no online courses teaching DJ theory. I just had songs and software and an obsession that wouldn't let go. I played for hours every night, teaching myself through trial and error, learning what sounded right by listening until my ears understood things my brain couldn't explain. That went on for years. When I got to college, I studied forestry technology of all things. I walked into the student union office on the first day and said, "Hey, I'm a DJ. I want to DJ the school parties." I had never played a real show before. I didn't even really know how to mix, but I had great music, the desire to create an amazing experience, and the understanding that nobody was going to hand me an opportunity. I had to make my own. That first college party changed something in me. My mixing was mediocre at best, but people still had a blast. And watching that room, students jumping around, singing, losing themselves in the music, I had a realization that I carry with me to this day. A party is never really about who the DJ is. It's about the energy the crowd feels. A DJ living their true purpose is in service of the dance floor, not the center of attention, the conductor of it, a curator of energy and emotion. After that first party, I was everywhere. Every event, every house party, anywhere people needed music, I was there. And I did all of it for free, or for a few bucks here and there. Not because I was generous, because it never occurred to me that I could charge for it. I just loved doing it. I loved watching people have fun. During those college years, I transformed into DJ Kevin Brightside. I'd barely earned any money from DJing, but I was deeply rewarded in other ways. I felt like an energy healer working with the vibration of sound, helping my fellow students have amazing experiences on the dance floor. It sounds dramatic, but that's what it felt like. And that feeling never went away. Then college ended and reality hit. I moved to a new town, got a full-time job running around in the forest. Stable. Fine. I kept working on my craft, learning new mixing techniques, jamming out in my bedroom, but I had no crowds to play for. My skills were rapidly improving, and I had no outlet to share them. I was letting the dream sit idle, hoping someone would remember me from the college days. Nobody did. My father ran a painting company called Brightside Painters. He had a saying that shaped the way I approach everything. If you don't know what to do, pick up a broom and start sweeping. It meant stop overthinking, stop waiting for the perfect moment, and just start doing something useful. That philosophy had been in my bones since I was a kid, but I wasn't living it. I was waiting for something to happen instead of making something happen. So I did something. I had a friend who worked for an audio video production company. They handled the big concerts, events, and conferences in the area. I also knew they did the occasional wedding. So I told my friend, "Hey, I'm a DJ. If you ever need a DJ for a wedding, let me know." I saw a potential opening, and I went after it. My friend called me a week later, offering me a gig to DJ a wedding reception. I said yes immediately, portraying confidence on the outside. On the inside, I was thinking, "Oh shit, maybe I'm in over my head here. I can play my EDM music. I barely know the basics of running event equipment. And a wedding is a big deal. I have no idea what's expected of me aside from playing songs." My buddy rented me the equipment package, gave me a crash course on how to use the gear, and walked me through what would be expected. I loaded up on wedding staple songs, and I showed up. One night, one event, $1,000. That wedding changed the trajectory of my entire life. Not because it went perfectly. It didn't, and I'll tell you about that later. But because it opened a door I didn't even know existed. See, I'd been doing what every bedroom DJ does. I was looking at the club scene, the bar scene, the festival circuit, and trying to figure out how to break in. I was playing the wrong game entirely. There are over 40,000 weddings a year in British Columbia alone. 93% of them hire a DJ. And the average couple spends $1,500 to $2,500 on that DJ for one night. That's not a side hustle. That's a market. And that feeling I got watching the college students have an amazing time on the dance floor, I felt that same energy at my first wedding, watching friends and family members jumping around, dancing, singing, experiencing moments of pure joy. The context was different, but the magic was the same. That first wedding was in the fall of 2012. Pretty much right after, my now wife Laura and I left to travel India. We planned on 6 weeks but ended up being gone for 4 months. Needless to say, the extended trip left us strapped for cash. While still in India, we started brainstorming ways to make money when we got home. And the obvious answer was staring us in the face. Start a wedding DJ business. And I was clueless on where to start with the business side. But Laura had a bachelor's degree in entrepreneurship. She didn't just understand business. She was trained in starting and launching them. While still in India, we built a simple website, ran some postings on the local classifieds, and booked 3 weddings before we even got home. My starting rate was $1,000 to $1,300. I collected almost $1,700 in deposits with a guarantee of another $1,700 after working the weddings. That was $3,400 for 3 days of work, with half-paid months in advance. When we got home, I booked another 7 weddings, totaling about $9,000 in gross revenue. Not bad for 10 days of actual work, plus a few hours of admin. I never could have done it without Laura's support. I had no idea where to start with the business side. Taking payments, managing cash flow, organizing client details, budgeting and purchasing equipment, marketing. In fact, even though it was the obvious business choice, I tried to back out because I was overwhelmed. Thankfully, Laura kept nudging me forward and helping me take action. Looking back on it now, I was just scared of the unknown. Setting up and running the business side of things ended up being a lot easier than I thought. Within 3 years of that first wedding, I was making over $50,000 a year working weekends plus a few hours of admin here and there. Not because I suddenly became a better DJ. My technical skills barely changed. I was already good. What changed was where I pointed those skills and what I understood about what I was actually selling. And here's the part that might surprise you, especially if you've ever thought of wedding DJs as the corny guys playing Cupid Shuffle and making bad jokes into a microphone. The DJs who are getting those festival slots you're jealous of, a lot of them built their income doing weddings first. Weddings funded their gear, gave them performance experience, and created the financial stability to chase the gigs they really wanted. Weddings weren't the ceiling, they were the launch pad. We're talking about $50,000 a year or more, working Fridays and Saturdays, doing something you already know how to do, using skills you've already spent 1,000 hours building. Your hours weren't wasted, you just haven't pointed them in the right direction yet. But here's what nobody tells you about what actually makes this work. It's not what you'd expect. What I assumed mattered most when I started, my mixing ability, my music library, my technical skills, turned out to matter least. And what I thought was just a personality trait, something I never would have put on a resume, turned out to be the single most valuable asset in my entire business. I'm going to tell you what that is in the next chapter. And when you hear it, I think you're going to realize you've had it all along.